You are listening to rudolfsteineraudio.com. This is a reading of the most recent Bamford translation of the book by Rudolf Steiner, entitled How to Know Higher Worlds, A Modern Path of Initiation. This first part here is a reading of the prefaces to the various editions. Preface to the third edition, which was the first publication in book form. This book contains the first part of what originally appeared as a series of articles under the title How to Know Higher Worlds. The second part will be published separately later. Footnote, this is called The Stages of Higher Knowledge, which is also on this website. End of footnote. A work of this kind, however, dealing with the human inner development necessary to perceive supersensible worlds, should not come before the public in a new form without some introductory remarks. What is communicated in this book concerning the development of the human soul is meant to fulfill several different needs. First of all, it is intended to help a person who, though feeling drawn to the findings of spiritual science, is compelled to ask where those who claim to have something to say about the deeper riddles of life get their knowledge. Spiritual science certainly has something to say about such riddles. But if we wish to confirm for ourselves the facts on which its claims are based, we must ourselves attain supersensible cognition. That is, we must follow the path of knowledge this book tries to describe. Yet, it would be wrong to think that the communications of spiritual science are worthless for a person with neither the inclination nor the opportunity to follow this path. Naturally, to research these facts, one must possess the faculty necessary to enter supersensible worlds. But once these worlds have been researched and the findings communicated, even those who have not themselves perceived the facts can form an adequate judgment of them. Much of what spiritual science presents can in fact be easily verified simply by the application of healthy judgment in a completely unbiased way. Only we must not allow our impartiality to be disturbed by any of the numerous preconceptions so common in human life today. For example, we may easily object that some spiritual scientific observations do not agree with certain modern scientific findings. But in truth, there is no scientific finding that contradicts spiritual research. It is easy to think this or that piece of scientific evidence contradicts what spiritual science tells us about higher worlds. But only if we have not considered the scientific findings impartially and from every point of view. In fact, we shall find that the more open-mindedly we compare spiritual science with the positive accomplishments of science, the more beautiful we recognize the complete agreement between the two to be. Admittedly, certain aspects of spiritual science will always more or less escape purely intellectual judgment. Even so, we can easily achieve a right relationship to these aspects too, once we realize that not only reason, but also healthy feeling can be the judge of truth. If we do not let sympathy or antipathy towards some particular opinion drive our feeling, but instead allow spiritual scientific insight into supersensible worlds to work upon it in a completely unbiased way, then we will find that an appropriate feeling judgment of the truth results. Besides healthy feeling of this kind, there are still other ways by which those who cannot or do not wish to walk the path to supersensible knowledge can verify spiritual scientific insights. Such people can feel the value of these insights for their lives, even if they experience them only second-hand in the communications of spiritual researchers. While we cannot all instantly become seers, the cognitive insights of a person who has such vision, can nevertheless provide healthy food for all. All of us can apply these insights to our lives. And if we do so, we shall soon realize not only the possibilities of life in every area, but also what life lacks when we exclude these insights. Indeed, rightly applied to our lives, insight into the supersensible worlds proves to be far from impractical, but rather practical in the highest degree. Those who do not wish to walk this cognitive path to higher knowledge themselves may well ask, if they are interested in the insights it offers, quote, "How does a seer arrive at these facts?" Close quote. This book seeks to provide such people with a picture of what must be done if one wishes to know the supersensible worlds. It tries to describe the spiritual path so that even those who do not undertake it themselves can have confidence in what is said by those who do. Once we become aware of what spiritual researchers do, we may find that it makes sense. The description of their path to the higher worlds may impress us in such a way that we understand why the reports of their findings seem enlightening to us. Thus, this book may serve those readers who want to strengthen and confirm their sense of truth and their feeling for the truth with regard to the supersensible world. But this book also offers guidance to those seeking a path to supersensible knowledge. Such people will be best able to test the truth of what the book contains by realizing it in themselves. If this is the intention, one should never forget that reading a description of soul development demands more than just knowing the contents of a book, which is often all we strive for when reading other works. Instead, one must live one's way into such a description and form a close, intimate relationship with it. We should begin by assuming that no single thing will be understood solely on the basis of what is said explicitly about it. Rather, we will have to come to understand this thing through many other statements concerning quite different topics. In this way, we will realize that what is essential does not lie in any single truth, but in the agreement between all. This process must be taken especially seriously by anyone carrying out the exercises. Although we may understand and practice an exercise correctly, this may yet have the wrong effect unless another exercise is added to it to resolve the one-sidedness of the first into harmony in the soul. If we read this book closely, so that reading it becomes an inner experience, we will not only come to know its contents, but different passages will also evoke different feelings. These feelings indicate the significance of these different passages for our own soul development, and help us to discover how to adapt the various exercises to our own individual natures. Reading a book like this, in which processes are described that have to be experienced to be understood, a reader will often find it necessary to return repeatedly to the text in order to reread the descriptions. If we do this, we will soon become convinced that we can reach a satisfactory understanding only when we have actually tried something for ourselves. For having done so, we will notice certain subtleties in the description that escaped our notice on first reading. Readers who do not intend to follow the path described here will nevertheless find much that is useful for their inner life, precepts for the conduct of life, explanations of what has always seemed mysterious, and so on. Those, on the other hand, who already have certain experiences behind them, and have in many respects been initiated by life itself, will find a certain satisfaction in seeing things coherently explained that they had already thought about separately, things they already knew, without perhaps having brought this knowledge into full understanding. Rudolf Steiner, Berlin, 1909. Preface to the 5th edition. How to Know Higher Worlds, A Modern Path of Initiation, was written more than 10 years ago, and it has been thoroughly reworked in every detail for this new edition. The need for such reworking arises naturally enough in the case of information concerning experiences and paths of the soul, such as those given in this book. Every aspect of a work of this kind remains inwardly bound to its author's soul and contains something that continues to work on within it. It could hardly be otherwise, then, that this continuing soul work should be accompanied by a striving to make the descriptions originally presented many years ago clearer and more accessible. Indeed, it was out of this striving that the work on this new edition arose. All essential elements of the exposition, all the major points, have been left as they were. Nevertheless, important changes have been made. I have been able to achieve a more precise characterization of details in many places. This seemed important to me, for if one wants to apply what is communicated in this book to one's own spiritual life, it is important that the paths of the soul that are described should be envisaged by the reader as exactly as possible. Descriptions of inner spiritual processes are much more liable to misunderstanding than descriptions of events in the physical world. Such misunderstandings arise easily, because the life of the soul is in constant movement, and because we fail to bear in mind that the life of the soul is very different from life in the physical world. Therefore, in preparing this new edition, I have focused on those parts of this book that may give rise to such misunderstandings, and have made every effort in my reworking to prevent them. When I first wrote the articles gathered in this volume, much of the material had to be presented differently, because many of the insights into the spiritual worlds that I have published in the last decade were not yet made public and could only be hinted at. For example, 10 years ago, I had to refer to the spiritual processes described in my books titled Occult Science, titled The Spiritual Guidance of the Individual and Humanity, title A Road to Self-Knowledge, and particularly title The Threshold of the Spiritual World, differently than seems appropriate now that these works have been made available. At the time of the articles, I could not speak of many things that have since been made public. Instead, I had to refer to oral communication for more information about these things. Today, much of what was referred to in this way has been published. Unfortunately, these comments may have led some readers to a misunderstanding. They may have been led to believe that the personal relationship to a teacher was more essential for those seeking spiritual schooling than it really is. I hope that my emphasis on certain details in this new edition will make quite clear that for people seeking spiritual schooling, under the current spiritual conditions, a totally direct relationship to the objective spiritual world is more important than a relationship with the personality of a teacher. Indeed, in spiritual training, the spiritual teacher today increasingly takes on a merely helping role, such as in accordance with contemporary educational philosophy, ordinary teachers in other fields of knowledge are expected to do. I hope I have sufficiently stressed that neither the authority of the teacher nor the student's trust in the teacher should be any more important in spiritual schooling than in any other area of knowledge or life. It seems to me important that we get a better understanding of this relationship between spiritual researchers and those who develop an interest in their findings. Thus, I trust I have improved this book in all areas where it seemed to me, after 10 years, to need improvement. This first volume will be followed by a second one that will offer additional discussions of the soul state that enables us to experience the higher worlds. The new edition of this book was print, or footnote, such a volume never appeared. The only continuation remains titled The Stages of Higher Knowledge. End of footnote. The new edition of this book was printed and ready for sale when the Great War, now being experienced by humanity, broke out. Writing this preface, my soul is deeply stirred by this fateful event. Rudolf Steiner, Berlin, September 7th, 1914. And the last preface in this book, preface to the 8th edition. The new edition of this book seemed to me to require only minor changes. Nevertheless, I have added an afterword to this edition, in which I endeavored to explain more clearly than before the psychological foundations necessary to understand it correctly. This afterword also shows opponents of anthroposophical spiritual science that they can hold fast to their view only because they take this spiritual science to be something completely different than what it really is. The true nature of spiritual science, however, they do not even take into consideration. Rudolf Steiner, May 1918, and the end of the prefaces.